Fran, can you share with me some of the history of your organisation?
Yeah, so the organisation was founded by a small number of very intrepid polio survivors. By the early 90s, these were people who were middle-aged. They were discovering that while they thought they'd left behind the acute symptoms of polio, they'd gotten over the original infection. Some of them had spent many years in hospital, got a great deal of rehabilitation, and in most cases were able to move around with the aid of things like calipers and crutches and so forth, but had a degree of mobility and felt that polio was something in their past, not so much their present anymore. And then suddenly, when they got to about 45 or 50 years of age, they were discovering new symptoms and they couldn't quite fathom what was going on with them. So people who maybe needed a crutch to walk around were increasingly finding that they actually needed a wheelchair. People were becoming more fatigued. Some people were suffering from chronic pain, headaches, other symptoms, extreme intolerance to the cold. A group of them met in Joan Bradley's kitchen and they had a chat about what was happening to them. And they agreed that more research was needed. They wanted to get some guest speakers from the United States, where there was a lot more chatter about this phenomenon, which was increasingly being described as post-polio syndrome. And they wanted to bring it to the attention of the Irish medical authorities, as well, of course, as fellow polio survivors. So that was the genesis of the organisation. I think about 8 or 9 people came together after about 6 months. They organised a conference where they actually got some funding to bring over guest speakers from the United States. And they advertised, you know, using letters to the newspapers and other, you know, very cheap methods of communication. And they brought together, I think, about 50 or 60 polio survivors for their first conference. And really, it grew from there.
And can you talk to me about some of the work that you do today?
So today, I suppose the organization has moved on. It's changed enormously over the years. The biggest thing we do is we provide a range of services and supports directly to polio survivors. So literally the aforementioned wheelchairs, calipers, those sort of aids and appliances that help people to maintain their mobility. We would also help people in terms of providing access to physiotherapy, occupational therapy and so forth. We provide people with heating grants. Intolerance to cold is a real problem for polio survivors. Many of them would be people who could be at risk of hypothermia, particularly when you take into account in the last year or so the huge increase in the costs of energy. So heating their homes is a challenge for many polio survivors long before the recent energy crisis. So for many years now, we've been providing a heating grant to our members, particularly those on lower incomes. Other things we do, we have social support groups around the country where polio survivors can come together, meet other polio survivors, engage in peer support, learn about other services and supports out there. We provide polio survivors with information, advice, support. So if people want help in applying for a medical card, we'll help them with that. For disability pensions, it could be card adaptations, you know, in terms of hand controls or boot hoists, those sort of practical things. We also have a telephone support service. So for members who can't get out of the house, can't attend in person our events around the country, then we have a telephone support service where a member rings another polio survivor. So it's one polio survivor speaking to another. They could be talking about the most recent GAA game. They could be talking about politics. They could be talking about their experiences in hospital as children or recovery from polio. It doesn't matter. It's pure support. It's a really valuable lifeline to members who may struggle otherwise to engage with the organisation. So it's a wide range of supports. We also have a magazine we send out 3 times a year to all of our members. We have monthly e-zines and we run an annual conference with guest speakers.
So 2023, this year, is an important year for you. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's the 30th anniversary of the organisation. And I suppose one of the challenges we face with that is that there are no longer any of the original founders left alive. So last year, Jim Costello was the last of the original founders who passed away. And so I suppose that generation is gone now. So we want to honour them. And at the same time, we obviously want to continue their legacy. And I suppose that's what we're trying to achieve this year. It's both marking their contribution and what they did for their fellow polio survivors, but it's also ensuring that their legacy continues. And I suppose that's the highlight of the year's events. It will certainly, a strong emphasis will be on the annual conference, which will be in June in Carlo, and we hope to have some interesting guest speakers then. And then the actual anniversary is in October, which coincidentally coincides with the World Polio Day, which is usually towards the end of October. So we're looking to combine that and to find a way, as I said, of honouring the founders of the organisation and indeed those who came after them and helped build the services and supports for our members, and at the same time recognise that there are still many polio survivors out there who need help and support, and to ensure that we're still there and that other polio survivors are there to help them in the years ahead.
Now, you can hear in the background, the phones are ringing. It's a busy office. Can I ask you, how many, do you know how many polio survivors or how many people in Ireland were ever affected by polio? Have you been able to, do we have that data either historically or presently?
Not really. And I think one of the difficulties is that the number of people that became disabled as a result of polio was never properly counted. And then, of course, the problem with polio as well was it affected a small proportion of people who contracted it quite seriously. Other people contracted polio and just experienced a flu. So, you know, it's very, very difficult to measure how many people actually contracted polio. I've heard estimates that only maybe 5% of people who contracted polio ever knew they had polio. And then that because the records weren't very well kept, we've had to use data from the UK and the US. And the estimates were that maybe something in the region of 10 to 15,000 people in Ireland experienced some level of disability or impairment in their mobility as a result of polio. But beyond that, we don't have anything else other than that to go on. By our estimates, we now think there might be about 5,000 people in Ireland still living with some effects from the original polio infection as children. In terms of our membership, we have just under 1,000 people who are members. And in addition to that, we have another few hundred people who we connect with and liaise with who are on what we call our polio register.
Might some of those who had polio decided that they just didn't want to ever acknowledge that or have anyone know about that? Is there would there have been a stigma about polio up to quite recently?
There is and there was, I'm afraid. Yeah, so stigma is a really important issue. I mean, we've had a member who didn't know he had polio until he experienced post-polio syndrome in his late 50s. And he didn't know what was going on. He went to the doctor. His doctor hadn't a clue what was going on. And I don't know, had the doctor received one of our leaflets or something at some point in the past? But the doctor raised the issue of polio and he said, of course not, I've never had polio. And of course, we all tend to think of people with polio as people, you know, who've experienced a very severe level of disability. This chap hadn't, as far as he was aware, any level of disability, and yet he was experiencing these post-polio symptoms. He went back home and talked to his older sisters, and he raised the question of polio, and they finally admitted that as a child he had polio, but nobody in the family ever discussed it. Now, he'd clearly made a complete, and thankfully a complete recovery from the original infection of polio, didn't and wasn't aware of any particular impairment as a result of the polio infection, but yet still suffered from post-polio syndrome later. But lots of our members would tell us stories of their families never speaking about it, of neighbours shunning them and shunning their families as children because there was polio in the house. And, you know, that fear of infection. You'd hear similar stories around TB going back to the 1940s and 50s. And there would be still members today whose partners, their spouses, and their children don't know that they had polio. We would even be aware of members, for example, who would tell us that their family members think they have a sports injury from when they were a child.
Can I talk to you a little bit about some of the challenges? I mean, you have 1,000 members. How are the levels of awareness nowadays around people who have been impacted by polio? Like, is that one of the things that you would find challenging in the work that you do and trying to involve people? Is because people feel that polio is something that went out with the dark ages.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. I mean, firstly, for our members, one of the sayings that our members use a lot is, we're still here. That's one of their sort of catchphrases. And you can understand from their perspective that they do feel they're a forgotten population. Of course, it's fantastic that polio was eliminated as an infection in Ireland and in the rest of Europe. But it did leave behind this sense that these are a forgotten generation of people affected by this disease, and it is a terrible disease. And yet, because of vaccination, society moved on. No one is afraid of polio anymore, at least not in Ireland. And as a result, the last generation to get polio are sort of there as this historical legacy. And they do feel that they talk to doctors, they talk to physios, they talk to politicians or others about their needs. And they're getting stares from these clinicians and others as if to say, but I thought polio was something from the past. Or, you know, doctors would say to them, we didn't even cover polio in medical school. So it's a huge psychological issue, I think, for many of our members, that they do feel forgotten. And then in a practical sense, it's a huge challenge as well, because when they go looking for help and understanding and support, it's often not there because of ignorance, quite frankly, and a lack of knowledge, and a sense among some clinicians and others that this is something that, as you say, belongs to the dark ages, whereas it is within obviously living memory of many people within Ireland. And that's not also to ignore the fact that there's an increasing number of people who have arrived in Ireland in the last 20 years who have come from areas and regions where polio was endemic in the last 20, 30 years. A lot of these people would be, you know, experiencing significant levels of disability as well, because they would not have had the experience in Ireland of being hospitalised for years, which had its downsides. But on the other hand, many people did receive quite a level of rehabilitation and other care, although not in every case. But people from Africa and Asia who contracted polio 20, 30 years ago, there were little or no services or supports for them. And therefore, many of them would be quite severely disabled and need high levels of support.
You mentioned vaccine there, and we know that I think it's about 70 years, is it, since the polio vaccine was initially discovered. The polio vaccine really was the forefather and the forebearer for an awful lot of the modern privileges of medicine that we enjoy today. And maybe do people factor that in, or do they even link that in with polio?
I think our members are extraordinarily conscious of that. And of course, it's a bittersweet thing for our members, because many of them would be people born in their 40s and 50s, particularly those in the late 50s and even into the start of the 60s, where they were the last generation to get polio. And of course, the vaccine was too late for them. So that there's an element of bitterness about that. But at the same time, of course, they are hugely grateful for the fact that this horrific disease attacking children literally in the cot or as toddlers, that's gone. That's something that children in Ireland and in most of the world now no longer have to be afraid of. So there aren't too many anti-vaxxers amongst polio survivors. You know, they're strongly supportive of vaccines and hugely conscious and aware of what vaccines can do and what they have done for public health throughout the world. And for them, I suppose, yeah, it came too late for them. But that makes them even more appreciative of the value of vaccinations.
What are some of the challenges that you face in providing a service like this, especially in light of the hyperinflation and the current cost of living crisis that we're all living in?
I think the initial challenge we face as an organisation is our members are older. And so the average age of a polio survivor member now is about 73. So, you know, that fact that polio was eliminated in the early 1960s in Ireland has meant that we very few members, say, under the age of maybe early 60s. So that presents a challenge for the organisation and the model that we operate under, because from the first day that the organisation was founded, and the founders were very strong that this should be an organisation of polio survivors for their fellow polio survivors. And we've maintained that ethos. So, for example, the majority of our board members are still polio survivors. And polio survivors still have a very strong influence on everything that we do. So I often say to new staff members here, there's representative organisations and there's representative organisations. We really are a membership and representative organisation. And it's absolutely written, it's stenciled into our DNA. But of course, that's a challenge then as polio survivors age. The fact of the matter is that volunteering by polio survivors is becoming more of a challenge. So maintaining that ethos is going to be very, very difficult in the years ahead. I suppose, on the other hand, we do have people arriving into Ireland affected by polio. And so there is, to some extent, a new generation coming through. And we've been actively recruiting people, both in direct provision centres and elsewhere, who are younger, affected by polio, and who can also make a contribution to the organisation. But that remains, I suppose, the biggest single challenge the organisation faces. And that affects things like fundraising and so forth. And as you mentioned, I mean, the cost of living, that's affecting our members. The heating grants that we provide to our members are not adequate for the level of cost increases that people have experienced in terms of energy costs in the last year. So there's more pressure on us to raise more funds for things like the heating grant, which is purely and solely funded through fundraising. We don't get any government or state grants or supports for that service. So that has presented challenges to us, yeah.
Now, if people want to find out more about the organisation, maybe make a donation, or even somebody maybe who hasn't ever acknowledged to others that, or to yourselves as an organisation, that they are a polio survivor, what steps would they take to do that?
Well, firstly, I would say to any polio survivor or a family member of polio survivors that we are there for all polio survivors. They don't have to join the organisation to avail of our services. That's number one. Secondly, they can sign up to the polio register, which means in a sense that we know of them. We will communicate with them from time to time, but they don't have to worry about being a member of an organisation or having to attend meetings or events or be asked to raise funds. We're not going to bother them that way. Of course, we would appreciate and we would prefer if people joined the organisation and became involved, but that's not essential. At the end of the day, we are there for all polio survivors, and indeed we can provide and will provide advice and support to their family members as well. So that's the most important thing. Our telephone number is 01889 8920, and our website is www.polio.ie. And then in terms of members of the public like to know more about polio, the legacy of polio, we have a really valuable book called Polio and Us. It's the stories of polio survivors, sadly most of whom have now passed away. But it's an interesting time capsule, I suppose, of the life experiences of people who contracted polio in the 40s and 50s and what they went through. But it's not a downbeat book. It's actually quite inspiring and it's quite uplifting. And so anyone wants to know more about polio and what it was like, I would encourage people to go on our website and order a copy of that book. And of course, we have a fundraising page. And if anyone would like to contribute to any of our fundraising activities, but most especially in terms of funding our heating grant, then I'd encourage them to follow the links on our website to our fundraising pages.
Fran, thank you very much for chatting to us. It's been a pleasure to learn all about your work.
Thank you very much, Brenda.